This account says nothing about the creation of spirits by God, nothing of the revolt and secession of the spirits, nothing about the spheres of progress, nothing about the shaping of the odic bodies of the fallen spirits in various stages, and nothing about the incarnation of 260. Those odic bodies into earthly substance. Your biblical story of the creation of the world describes it as if it were an original and entirely independent creation, quite unconnected with the creation of the spirits and their fall. The original Bible contained all of these facts, but when the Holy Writ was revised later, the powers of darkness were at work to deprive mankind of the knowledge of how things are related in God's plan of salvation and to withhold from them the consolation of knowing that ultimately everything will return unto God. For it is God's will that all men be saved and attain to full knowledge of the truth. 2 Timothy 2:3-4. It was for the very purpose of leading everything back to God that the material world was created. The powers of darkness were, of course, much better served by the doctrine of hopelessness and despair, and by the belief in an eternal hell, about which one of your poets, Dante, has written the dreadful words, "All hope abandon, ye who enter here." Such sentiments were far more acceptable to the rulers of hell than was the belief in a merciful God, who may, indeed, be angered and punish with just cause, but who, in the end, will forgive his children and call them back to him. The true conception of the deity has been debased by the doctrine of eternal damnation, designed only to inspire fear. What is more, that doctrine made it more difficult to carry out the plan of salvation conceived by a God who sent to sinful and suffering humanity this message of all-forgiving love: "Even if a mother could forget her child, I will never forget you." Isaiah 49:15. Many passages in your Bible have shared the fate of the paintings by the old masters placed upon the walls of some of your ancient churches. In later times, so-called church painters came and daubed their commonplaces over the masterpieces. When you carefully remove the outer layer of paint from the walls today, the ancient pictures are once more revealed, leaving the beholder enraptured over the art of the great masters. In the same way, the truthful picture presented by the original Bible was defaced in later times. Erring mortals revised the biblical accounts, omitting what they could not understand or adding their own mistaken explanations. Their successors improved further upon the previous work, adding and deleting at will. In this way, not only was the truth crowded aside, but many things crept into the scriptures that tend to make a travesty of the Word of God. A human poet coined the phrase, "Books have their fates," and unfortunately this is true of the Bible also. Much of what it 261 should contain has been eliminated, and much of what it does contain should never have been admitted, because it contradicts the truth. When some churches refuse to acknowledge this fact and persist in regarding the Bible you have as authentic, they are serving the cause of God poorly. In fact, they are doing it more harm than good. Even the less educated, when they read the Bible carefully, and especially the account of the creation, must realize that some of what is written there cannot be correct. God himself complains through the prophet Jeremiah about the falsifications introduced into the Old Testament. "How can you say, 'We are wise and possess God's law'? I tell you, the false pen of the copyist has made it into a lie. The wise are ashamed and dismayed, for they have trapped themselves. They have discarded the word of the Lord, so what manner of wisdom is left them?" Jeremiah 8:9. Elsewhere in the Holy Writ the truth had suffered at the hands of translators who have rendered certain words and phrases of the original text so inadequately as to distort their real meaning beyond recognition. From what I have said you can see the reason for the great obscurity and the many misstatements to be found in the story of creation as you have it today. Only occasional references retain a faint glimmer of the truth. Some of the stages of the evolution of material creation are hinted at, but they are not consistent with the facts, whether in point of number or of sequence. The same is true of the biblical account of the creation of the first human beings. Here the creation of the spirits is confused with the incarnation of the first spirits in human bodies. In the first chapter of the Bible you are told that God brought man into existence as his last creation, after the earth, plants and beasts were already there. It says, Then God created man in his own image, in the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. Then God blessed them and said unto them, Be fruitful, and multiply. Genesis 1:27-28. It is true that God created the two spirits that were the first to be incarnated as human beings, and which, as such, bore the names Adam and Eve, in his own image prior to their apostasy. It is also true that he created them as male and female spirits, and that he blessed their union. This, however, was not after the earth with its plants and animals had been made, but it refers to the time of their creation as spirits. Anything made by 262. God in his image must be a spirit, for God is spirit, and spirit only, and, hence, not matter. Whatever he creates in his image must likewise be pure spirit, and not part spirit and part matter, as is the case with mortals. The rest of the scriptural account of the creation of man contains contradictions even more flagrant. A few lines further on you are told that God made man, and, moreover, only the male, at a time when there was no other living thing on earth, whereas, according to the first account, man is said to have been made after all other life had been created. According to the second account, God placed man upon a barren earth, and not until then did he create a garden in Eden, into which he brought the man. And not until then did trees bearing luscious fruits of all kinds grow in this paradise, as you call the garden. God is then supposed to have told man to cultivate the garden and protect it. Inasmuch as there was, according to the same report, nothing else on earth, it is hard to imagine who man needed to protect the garden from. So many sentences, so many contradictions. Compare this incomprehensible picture with the true picture I have given you. There you see paradise as that spiritual sphere into which God, after the revolt of the spirits, sent the less guilty followers among the rebels, partly as punishment, partly to test them once more. Here stood the spiritual tree of the knowledge of good and evil. This was nothing less than God's commandment, which had been given for the purpose of testing the spirits in this sphere, and whose significance they did not grasp. The observant saw the violation of this commandment, or rather, of this prohibition, would show whether the spirits in the sphere of paradise were prepared to take sides with God again, or whether they were fully determined to join Lucifer. Should they respond to this test by obeying God, the commandment would become for them the tree of life in God's glorious kingdom. Should they disobey, it would become a tree of death. They would then be driven from this paradise down into the spheres of Lucifer. That would be the day on which their severance from God would be complete, the day of their spiritual death. On the day you eat thereof, you will die. Genesis 2:17. Now you understand why Adam was commanded to protect paradise, namely, to protect himself and the others against succumbing to the temptation to sin by disobeying God. Now you also understand what the scriptures mean by saying that after the expulsion from paradise of the spirits that had shown disloyalty, they were prevented from returning there by cherubim with flaming swords. The die had been cast, they had given their allegiance to the ruler of the abyss. Henceforth the spheres of darkness were to be their lot. They had no further claim upon the fields of paradise, which will remain close to those fallen spirits until the day on which they 263. On their way back to God, have once again reached this spirit sphere of happiness as a preparatory stage for the sphere of heaven. Then they may re-enter the spiritual garden of Eden, and from it ascend to that glory out of which they were once driven because of their own sins. So the opposite of what God is supposed to have mockingly uttered according to the report in your Bible is true. That account says that God, at the moment when countless hosts of his children were being driven into the unspeakable woe of utter exile from his kingdom, exclaimed, Man has become like one of us, now he knows what is good and what evil. Let him not also reach out his hand to take and eat the fruits of the tree of life and become immortal. Genesis 3:22. These are the words of a fiend, not those of an infinitely benign God and, as a matter of fact, they are the words with which Satan mocked the deceived spirits. God, on the contrary, wants these spirits, even after their fall, to reach out for the tree of life, in obedience to his will and in their return unto him. The powers of the abyss, however, are intent upon preventing those spirits, which first experienced God's clemency in the creation of the spheres of improvement, from extending their hands toward the tree of life and from returning to God. Could Lucifer have had his way, those stages would never have been created and no material world would ever have existed. He would then have been able to exercise his despotic sway over those spirits without restraint and without having to fear the loss of a single one of his subjects. I must also take exception to the way in which the creation of the first woman is described. According to the biblical account, God resolved to give the first man a helpmate in his isolation. To this end he is said to have formed out of the earth every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man, in order that he might find a woman among them. But no suitable mate was found. In order to remedy this inconvenient state of affairs, God is said to have caused the man to fall into a deep sleep, during which he took one of the ribs out of his side and closed up the gap with flesh. From the rib, God is said to have made a woman and brought her unto the man as his mate. As you know, this story has been made the butt of ridicule, especially among the irreligious. It is painful to see God's act of creation so grossly misrepresented and exposed to ridicule by man. In this instance also, evil has turned the fair image of truth into a repulsive caricature, through the instrumentality of its human agents and so that the conception of an 264. Almighty and all-knowing God should be turned into something ludicrous, since to make a thing an object of ridicule is to forge the deadliest weapon for its destruction. God did not prevent this distortion of the truth, as indeed he does not intervene when people want to do evil things. Seekers after the truth, and the righteous generally, always had the means at their command to allow them to discriminate between the true and the false, also in the falsified versions of the Holy Scriptures, being free to communicate with the good spirit world from which they could learn the truth at all times. What, then, is the true story of the creation of the first pair of human beings? Adam was the first spirit to reach the point at which he could emerge from the higher orders of the animal kingdom and be incarnated in human form, although his incarnation did not proceed in the manner incorrectly related in the Bible. God did not fashion a human figure out of clay and blow life into its nostrils, thus making him a man. Rather, the incarnation of the first human spirit proceeded according to the identical laws that still apply today in the materialization of spirits. This is a subject about which I have already instructed you at length, so you know that today the odd so-called materialization mediums is required for converting the spirit forms into matter. This same law was applied by God in the incarnation of the first human spirit. Since, naturally, no human materialization mediums were available to supply the required odd, God took the odd of the earth in a composition that corresponded to that of the human body. The odic mixture was the same as that out of which the human body develops when it grows today. Already Paul said that God gives each form of life its own characteristic body. Not all earthly creatures have the same material body. The body of man is unlike that of the four-footed beast, as this again is unlike that of a bird or a fish. 1 Corinthians 15:38-39. The preparation of the odd for the incarnation of the first man was undertaken by God's spirit world. The body of the first man, whom you call Adam, was therefore literally taken from the earth, although not in the manner in which you have heretofore believed. No figure was fashioned out of clay, but the spirit limbs of that spirit being were covered with a material body, with the aid of the condensed odd of the earth. That same body of Adam's, formed as I have described, was again dissolved into earthly odd after his death. It had been taken from the earth in the form of odd, and in the form of odd it was returned to the earth. That is the law that governs all material beings. 265. The first man who thus came into existence was the only one of his kind. As your Bible quite rightly says, he was lonely, surrounded as he was by nothing but plants and animals, and he longed for the hour when another spirit should have progressed to the point at which it could be incarnated in human form. He therefore looked about among the higher animals to find one that at its death might be considered worthy in God's sight of being advanced to the human stage. Your scriptural account hints at this when it tells you that God brought all the beasts unto the first man, so that he might look for a helpmate from among them. The day came at last on which another spirit reached the human stage. This time it was a female spirit, the same one which had been Adam's consort in God's kingdom and later, in the sphere of paradise, where she had been the first one to disobey, and it caused Adam to disobey likewise. As her guilt had been the greater, so too had been her punishment. Her ascent from the depths had therefore been slower, and she did not reach the level of human existence as soon as did her male dual spirit. The story of the incarnation of this female spirit as given in the Bible of today gives a faint inkling of the truth. The incarnation of Eve, as the first woman is called in your Bible, took the same course as do all spirit materializations. In her case, it was no longer necessary for God to take the odd of the earth, since a materialization medium, namely Adam, was available. Adam's possessing unusual mediumistic powers was due to the circumstance that the spirit world had materialized his body and was in constant mediumistic contact with him. Just as today the materialization of a spirit is possible only when the materialization medium is in a deep trance, so it was in those times. The deep trance into which Adam fell is referred to in the Bible by the words, God caused Adam to fall into a deep sleep. Genesis 2:21. This was a mediumistic sleep, in which Adam's spirit left his body. As is the case also today, the odd of the materialization medium is not sufficient to effect complete materialization and must be supplemented by substance drawn from the medium's body in dissolved form. So, in materializing Eve, the spirit world dissolved a part of Adam's physical substance and used it to fashion Eve's body. This proceeding gave rise to the biblical account of the removal of one of Adam's ribs. When Adam had fallen asleep, God took one of his ribs and formed it into a woman. Genesis 2, 21-22. As a rule, the materialization of spirits lasts for a limited time only, after which dissolution takes place and the odd and physical substance lent by the medium is returned to him. However, in the case of Eve, permanent. 266. Materialization was aimed at, and for this reason, none of the odd or the part of the physical substance taken from Adam could be restored to him. Hence, the spirit world had to make good his loss, which it did by drawing upon the odd of the earth, as it had done when it first formed Adam's body. This is indicated in the Bible with the words, which you have so far not understood, he closed up with flesh the place where the rib had been removed. This is how the first pair of human beings was formed, from whom the whole line of human beings was to descend by way of reproduction. In physical reproduction, only the seed out of which the child's body is to grow is transmitted. The spirit is united with that body only moments before birth, in conformity with laws unknown to you. The life of the child within its mother's womb originates with her. It is her blood that circulates through the child's body and sets its organs in motion as soon as they become reasonably ready to function, which generally happens in the fifth month of human pregnancy. This movement of the child's organs while it is still in the womb is necessary, to accustom them to the part they will have to play. It is not, therefore, produced by the child's spirit, which is not embodied until later, but by the mother. It is a process similar to that used in breaking in an engine after it has been finished and assembled. Initially, it is set in motion by outside power, before being equipped with its own, under which it will later operate. It must be broken in before it is ready for service, and the same thing applies to the bodies of developing terrestrial beings. God's omnipotence and wisdom are nowhere more evident to thoughtful minds than in connection with nature's great secret of the coming into the world of a new human life, the same thing being true, of course, as regards all other living creatures. In all instances it is fallen spirits that are incorporated into bodies produced by procreation, in conformity with laws of God conceived with such wisdom that your human understanding could not grasp this divine secret, even were I to try to explain it. Adam and his wife had sons and daughters, Genesis 5, 4. The brothers took their sisters as wives, so that when you read in the Bible that Cain, after slaying Abel, fled into another country and knew his wife there, This does not mean that he first met her there, as though there were other people not descended from Adam and Eve. According to Hebrew usage, the word to know refers to having sexual intercourse. It is said of Cain, "And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived, and bore Enoch." Genesis 4:17. The same words are used in speaking of Adam, "And Adam knew his wife Eve, and she conceived and bore Cain." Genesis 4:1-267. Thus all mankind is descended from the first pair of human beings and constitutes the highest terrestrial level of progress in the ascent of the fallen spirits. This was the border of Lucifer's jurisdiction, and before the redemption, this was the point beyond which no fallen spirit was allowed to pass. Being lawfully Lucifer's subjects, none could escape from his rule, since he was unwilling to waive his right of sovereignty even in the case of those spirits that had repented of their misdeeds and longed to return to God's kingdom. The surrender of this right had to be forced upon him by a Redeemer, prior to whose coming all human spirits were obliged to remain in the human sphere, either as corporeal human beings, or as spirits in a sphere of the same level as that of earthly beings. Beyond this lay the great gulf dividing Lucifer's kingdom from God's kingdom. To bridge this gulf, a victory over Lucifer had to be achieved. Later I shall give you the details about the concept of redemption and how it was carried out. God had planned, once redemption was accomplished, the creation of the spirit spheres through which the spirits of human beings could, after their earthly death, ascend to the sphere of heaven step by step. To create such spheres before the redemption would have served no purpose, since none of the fallen spirits could have reached them, and through them attained heaven. In this connection I want to call your attention to another truth of great importance, namely, that before the redemption there lived a great many human beings who were the incarnation not of fallen spirits, but of spirits from heaven to whom God had granted permission to be born as human beings, in order that they might help others to attain the true faith in God and thus prepare themselves for the redemption. Among these heavenly spirits that lived in human form were Enoch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moses, Joshua, Caleb, most of the prophets, Mary, the mother of Jesus, and many others whose names are not contained in the original scriptural documents. After their death on earth, these spirits returned to God's kingdom, since, having taken no part in the defection from God, they had not fallen under Lucifer's jurisdiction. As for the spirit spheres that were provided for in God's plan of salvation and through which, by that plan, the human spirits were to ascend to God after the redemption, they are 13 in number. I need not describe each in detail. What you, as a mortal, can understand of this subject has already been told to you personally by spirits from the several spheres in the many communications imparted through mediums for your enlightenment, from their manner of appearance and from what they said you were able to. 268. Form an idea of their lot in each sphere, as well as of the general appearance of the spheres themselves. You have seen those suffering human spirits that went into the lowest of the 13 spirit spheres after their earthly death, and from them you have learned the meaning of Christ's words, "Cast him into the outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." From them, also, you learned the meaning of these words of the Bible, "The dead know nothing." Those spirits that were severed from God and condemned to spiritual death as a result of their unbelief during their life on earth knew nothing. They did not know who they had been as human beings or where they had lived. They did not know where they now dwelt or the significance of the horrors that they experienced in this darkness and that made them so unhappy. You could observe that as the spirits rose into higher spheres their consciousness broadened and their opposition toward God decreased. You were able, likewise, during these communications, to distinguish the different light effects pertaining to the individual spheres, the colors ranging from the deepest black of the lowest stage, through all colors, to the most radiant white of the uppermost sphere. The 13th sphere is of a white too dazzling to be endured by mortal eyes. This is the sphere inhabited by God's pure spirits. It is what you call heaven. From what you have seen of the spirits of the lowest spheres, you will have gathered how hard it is for them to struggle upward from their lamentable state, for their ascent within those spheres is possible only if they turn to God. but you yourself have witnessed the rebellious attitude taken by these very spirits toward any thought of God. It is a great act of clemency on the part of God to allow them to reassume human form with the least possible delay, for it is easier for them to acquire a belief in God as human beings, from what they see of God's creation and learn from their own reflections or from the instruction and example of others, than it would be in those low spirits' spheres. Most human spirits must go back to earth repeatedly, seeing that their lives there again and again leave much to be desired and cause them to return to the lowest spirits' spheres instead of fitting them for the higher stages of the beyond. Consider the lives of most humans. Are they not wholly centered on worldly matters? How many ever even think of God, firmly believe in Him and live righteously? Ever since the powers of evil introduced money into the world, they have had an instrument that gives them an unrestricted dominion over the majority of mankind. 269. The time that the spirits of the lower spheres must spend in the beyond before they are reincarnated in human form varies in each individual instance. It is determined in part by that spirit's transgressions during its preceding stay on earth. God is just, and every sin must be atoned for, but He is also charitable, and never punishes His creatures as severely as they deserve. The spirit communications from which you learned what you know of those 13 spheres came through mediums of the most widely varied types. This was done to provide you with evidence for the truth of these communications, for had you received the accounts of all the spheres through one and the same medium, you might have thought that they proceeded from His subconscious. As you know, your modern science is always ready to resort to the word subconscious when asked to explain anything in this field that it cannot account for on purely human grounds, but that it is unwilling to attribute to the working of spirits. The creation of the 13 spirit spheres was the last act in God's plan of salvation, and before it could be effected, a far more difficult problem had to be solved. What good were stages of progress from the deepest sphere of hell to the highest earthly one, the human stage, and what good were 13 spirit spheres planned for the further ascent to the height of God, as long as Lucifer refused to release any of the spirits that had sided with him and insisted on exercising his sovereignty over them, a right which God had conceded? Who, indeed, could force Satan to waive his rights, at least over those who contritely long to return to God? True, God Himself could have done so, but His sense of justice had conceded those rights to Lucifer, and that same sense of justice now kept him from diminishing them. Only a spirit willing to enter the realm of the Prince of Darkness and to expose itself to the rigors of his tyrannical rule would have the right to do battle with him. The same right applies when a people that is oppressed and harassed by its rulers rises against its tormentors in an effort to shake off their yoke. But it had to be a spirit that would not, by deserting God, become subject to Lucifer, and thus fall irretrievably into his clutches. It had to be a celestial spirit that, in assuming human shape, would enter Satan's dominion in body only, for everything that is embodied in matter is exposed to the influence of the powers of evil. That is why evil has so great a hold over all earthly creatures, even over those that are not evil. 270. Minded. The most righteous of men daily experience the power of evil and often stumble under its influence. Thus, the undertaking would be a great risk for the celestial spirit that attempted it. After its human birth, it would be a human being, like all other humans. It would remember nothing of its previous existence as a spirit of heaven. It would be ignorant of its own identity as well as of the mission for which it had been incarnated, and would be tempted by the evil one to sin, like all other humans. Moreover, God would not provide any greater spiritual aid than He gave to others, for this would have offended His sense of justice. This celestial spirit become human would have to earn whatever special divine aid might be needed for solving its task by repelling all advances of evil. In the measure in which it withstood the great temptations to sin, it would receive more and more assistance from God. This is true for all humans. On the other hand, as the measure of divine aid increased, the assaults by the powers of evil were allowed to increase as well. God does not allow anyone to be tempted beyond His strength. Children may not be as severely attacked by evil as adults, shoulders able to bear only half a hundredweight must not be called upon to carry twice that amount. So, the celestial spirit that was to assume human form would not be exposed in childhood to the degree of evil influences with which it would have to contend as an adult. Only after it discovered its identity and the purpose to be served by its incarnation would hell be permitted to unleash its full strength. Then the life and death struggle would begin.